Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. Happy Wednesday, it's hump day, and it's not often that I get to chat to fellow South Africans here on the podcast, and I'm super excited to share our next guest's story. And yeah, she's got a pretty incredible one, and got to experience something quite different post-Kona 2016 at Ironman 70.3 here in South Africa and the full Ironman in Port Elizabeth in April. We'll dig into that a little bit deeper on today's episode, but it's a huge pleasure to be able to welcome Desi Dickinson onto the podcast, and we'll get to that interview in just a moment. Just a massive thank you once again to everyone who has been digging in and supporting the Kona Edge and helping us out here. If you'd like to become a patron of the show, it's pretty simple to do. We've got some cool giveaways coming up, chatting to a few brands, and those are going to go to the patrons. So if you'd like to support the Kona Edge and support what we're doing, all you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support. It all adds up and it all helps. If you are a patron already, thank you very much. Double thumbs up to you. It is hugely, hugely appreciated. This is the Coach's Corner, and it's time to chat some coaching. If you need some help to get faster, or if you want to get stronger, we've got access to a network of triathlon coaches around the globe that are more than willing to help you out. All you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. If you own a coaching business, or if you're a coach yourself and you'd like to get a bit of airtime here on the podcast, all you have to do is head over to that same URL, scroll down to the bottom. All the details are there. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Well, it's a great pleasure to welcome onto the Kona Edge someone who I've been following her triathlon career for quite a while, and it's great to eventually have her on. And she's a fellow South African. We don't get to chat to too many of them here on the Kona Edge, but Desi Dickinson, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brad. I didn't know I had a stalker.
Well, Desi, I mean, the triathlon community in South Africa, it's not massive, yeah, but it's growing. I mean, the sport is definitely on the up here. And you tend to notice the good athletes, and you're one of them. I mean, you're one of the athletes that time and time again just put in great performances. Your sporting background, where did you sort of come up from? What's your sporting pedigree?
Yeah, well, you know, I've always been sporty. I think that's kind of a story that everyone has. But I was very into the ball sports. So I played hockey. I played softball. I played softball for South Africa. And I was so into it from probably like the age of 13 to 30 and really into my ball sports, action cricket, hockey, softball. Not much into the endurance stuff at all. When I was 32, and I decided to give up the ball sports, and in my 30s, dabbled a bit with, like, I did Argus, I did 94.7, I did a couple of sprints. To be honest with you, when I look back, I think I spent a lot of my 30s just being mediocre, you know, playing around with this, playing around with that. And that's the amazing thing about this journey that I'm on now, just a new level completely.
It's quite interesting coming from a team sport. I mean, you talk about ball sports, but like softball and that sort of thing, they're team sports. Whereas even though you might be training in a squad, triathlon, and particularly Ironman triathlon's quite a solitary thing, particularly when it comes to racing. It's all about you.
Yeah. I mean, but I do love that, because your results and your destiny is in your own hands. You know, you learn a lot from team sports, and I love those days. I made so many friends, but I do love being in control of my own training, being in control of my own results. I think I thrive on that, actually. But it is funny. I mean, when I made the Gauteng team, like way in the beginning, I made the Olympic distance Gauteng team. And I remember going to East London, and I was in my Gauteng suit, but I want to high-five every person in a Gauteng suit, you know, because I come from that background, and it just wasn't like that at all, you know, anyway.
It's very competitive. I mean, was it that competitive in the sort of softball space? Although it's in a team environment, it might be slightly different. Even though everyone does sort of like each other in the triathlon scene, there is a massive competitive sort of nature within the sport.
Yeah. Well, look, I must say, for me, and particularly being an age grouper, like I'm very competitive. But I also don't take it too seriously just in the sense that I think we are just age groupers. We are people out there. Like I'm in my 40s, my late 40s. I'm not a professional. I'm there to have fun as well. And I really, I enjoy seeing other people in my age group and speaking to them and greeting them on the course. And for me, that's what the vibe is about, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And but yet when I race, I'm like a like a bull terrier. You know what I mean?
Where does that competitive spirit come from? Because that's one thing I've picked up with chatting to as many age groups as I have. Is there this sort of inbred competitive streak that they might be pretty placid and docile when they're not racing, but gee, when they put on that wetsuit and swim cap, something happens inside.
Yeah, I think we're a particular breed. I don't know. I think we thrive on the pain. We thrive on the challenge. I don't know what it is. I think you have to be a particular kind of person because let's face it, there are thousands of people just competing for enjoyment. And I admire that as well. But there is a particular segment of us that are particularly wired, I think.
Slightly OCD, I think. Let's talk about life outside of triathlon. You mentioned in your 40s, you've obviously got a life outside of the sport. What do you do for a living? What's life like when you're not training and racing?
Mm. Well, it's quite an interesting story because my life has been in sales, generally speaking. And when I first got the Kona slot, it literally changed my life, and I then left my corporate job at the time, and I joined Virgin Active as a personal trainer. So I really changed my life. I mean, I did that for a year, but there's a lot of challenges in that environment, and I'm back in corporate now. So I work for Taljoy. I'm the direct sales manager, customer experience manager. So I think my vibe is people. Hey, I love people. I love interacting. Relationships, that kind of thing.
How do you get the balance right between, it doesn't, qualifying and racing on the Big Island doesn't come easy. You've got to put in the hours and the hard work. How do you get that balance right between work and sort of having a personal life and training?
Sure. I mean, it is tough. Hey? I think it's about being OCD and striving for those green blocks in training peaks. At the same time, and I do coach a few athletes, and one of my big things that I ascribe to is balance. So I'm all about balance, and I always tell my athletes, as much as we want to be at the best and improve ourselves, life also happens. And I'm not so hard on myself in that aspect. But I'm one of those people that will make the time. I will find time. I'll get up early. I'll find a spot during the day. You know what I mean? I do tend to stick to what I have to do. And I think it's discipline and wanting the end result a lot. You've got to want that thing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the drive is I think one thing that also does sort of help to get and qualify for a race like Kona is that you have to have that ambition. It's when you're tired and you have a late night and you know you have to be up at 4:30 the next morning for a run or for a ride. If you don't have that carrot dangling in front of you, chances are you're going to lie in, and that's you've got to have that sort of ambition. Yeah. I think that's a huge part of too.
Yeah, and that's where, the people you train with come into it. Because for me, the way that I know I'll get up in the morning is I have to arrange to meet somebody. And that's one of the things I do. Then I know I'll be up.
Yeah.
Because if I make an arrangement, I'll stick to it. I was just going to say, that thing of time, hey, time is one of the most precious commodities. And I think it's one of the real things that can differentiate age groupers. Because we all, it's that precious thing that we have in different quantities, if you know what I mean. And I do admire people who've got the time to train and rest and eat and get the massage and, all that type of thing, which goes to great performance.
But in saying that, the flip side of that coin, that's not always the ideal either. I mean, I've got friends who coach a lot of professional athletes, and sometimes they reckon it's best for that professional athlete to go and get like a part-time job so that they're not just racing and training, because they then tend to overanalyze things and almost get paralysis by analysis, which is also the sort of complete opposite to not having any time.
Oh, yeah. No, fair point, yes.
There's one thing, the sort of transition from team sports into triathlon, did it come pretty easily for you? I mean, you mentioned pottering around with cycle races like the Argus and the 94.7, and for people who are listening to this outside of South Africa, I mean, those are the two largest time cycling events in the world, and there's literally thousands and thousands of people that do them. But did you find the transition pretty easy? I mean, from a team sport where it's like short bursts to the endurance side of things?
No, I think I did, but when my performance really picked up and my ability to race and train really picked up was when I did join a group. So I do think even though the performance itself is individual, being part of a group, it's so invaluable. To surround yourself with like-minded people is one of the most powerful things.
Making
getting to be your best.
Making the decision to go on and doing the long stuff. I mean, there's lots of opportunities to do sprints and Olympics, but making the step up to like 70.3s and full Ironman distance, that takes a lot of commitment and a big decision. Tell me about the thinking of what pushed you to the long stuff.
And it's weird because I didn't realize I'd be this good at it. So in my very first triathlon, it was one of my colleagues. We started running together at lunchtime. And we were only running 5Ks at that point. And then we were doing a bit of gym together. And he said to me, let's do 70.3 East London in 2013. And we got a program off the internet and we trained together. And it was so weird for me because I think I came ninth in my age group that time. And I have to just say that I knew all the people in my age group. I'd studied them. I knew what times they did. I never saw myself there. You know what I mean? I've had these people on pedestals. And I can remember a very distinct time or period. It was over a period that I started to ask myself this question, and it was, why not me? And if these people have jobs and they're flesh and blood, and what are they doing that gets into that level, then why can't I do it? And so that question of why not me was quite pivotal in me getting to where I am now. And for me, it's about having a measure of talent, which I think I have, and then putting in the hard work. And I realized a combination of those two things would get me to where I am. And then the other thing I realized as well, with my swim being the weaker of my three disciplines, it would suit me to go longer. And that's exactly what's happened, because on the Olympic distance, because I come out of the water a bit later, I can never catch someone over a swim and a bike of a shorter distance. But I'm very competitive over 70.3 and full Ironman because of that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people get hung up on really trying to make the gains on the swim, and we'll chat about your swim in a bit more detail in another episode. But I think you're spot on there, that it's one of those things that if your swim is your weakness, you probably will lean more towards the sort of longer stuff. And then once that penny had dropped for you and you said to yourself, why not me? When did you actually realize, because you obviously have sporting ability. I mean, you don't represent your country in another sport without it. Once you've got it, you've got it, and you can translate that. We see it so often where something translates from one sport to another. When did you realize you were actually good enough to start competing for sort of like world championship slots?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a magical thing about getting a podium, hey? I always say to people, well, you've had that first taste. But so it started happening for me in the 5150s. And that's probably because Kim Dovey wasn't at the race, but I still, I got one or two podiums and one or two first places and then I thought, well, you know, this gift of being able to compete in your age group, which is unique to triathlon, is such a fantastic thing. It really is. It's given me this, I mean, who gets to compete and go onto a podium and be recognized and, at the age of, I mean, I'm 49 this year. You know, it's an incredible thing. Yeah. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
No, absolutely. I think it is incredible. And that's, I think, one thing that I love about the sport too is exactly that. How excited are you to be turning 50? You age group up and it all starts again, doesn't it?
It does. So, look, the other thing for me is I've trained consistently. When I say this, Brett, and for me, it really is, I think this is one of the key things. I'm not, you know, a lot of people out there and say they training for a race, but for me, this has just become a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that I love. I love getting up on the weekend, riding, coming back, eating like a horse, you know, chilling for the rest of the afternoon. It's my favorite thing. So it very much is a lifestyle for me.
Well, Desi, I'm gonna give you a compliment here because I actually cannot believe that you're turning 50. Like I mean no, I'm serious. Like I've seen your results, but I didn't actually click what age group you're in. And I seriously, yeah. I thought you were around sort of like mine, and the 40 to 45, yeah. early 40s. So I mean, yeah, kudos to you. I mean, and I think it's a good advert for the sport as well. It keeps you in unbelievable nick. Let's talk about something else that's not Kona related, but it's a story that popped up, and I don't think many people outside of South Africa will know about it, and I want to share it because it's a very, very cool story. You had a pretty interesting experience at Ironman 70.3 earlier this year. I saw it pop up on social media with a request, somebody looking for somebody to guide them, and you stuck your hand up. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so when I got back from Kona this year, I really was, I mean, like depleted on a lot of levels, financially, you know, energy, just tired. So Lucy and I chatted, and it was what's next? And I saw this thing on Facebook, and I thought, this is just perfect. So, you know, people talk about giving back, but it was also great for me in the sense that I could take a break, literally. And I could help someone in the process. So participate without the pressure of competing. And I think I needed that for a period of time. And so anyway, I saw this thing with Helen. She has albinism. She's partially sighted. And she needed a guide for 70.3 and Ironman. And to be honest, I wasn't quite sure what I was signing up for. It was a very interesting journey and very rewarding. Yeah, I don't know what else you want to know. We had a very interesting time. It was week in and week out on that horrible tandem. she'll know what I'm talking about. We gave her a nickname. Her name was Sissy. And, horrible. Sissy the Tank. Horrible bike.
Tell me about getting onto that, because I saw one of the first posts on social media after, I think it probably was your first ride on that tandem.
Yeah.
And if anybody's ever ridden a tandem, they'll know what we're talking about. It takes a special kind of crazy to be able to ride a tandem. And if you've never done it before, for a laugh, it's probably worthwhile, but it's not something you want to do long term.
No. Yeah. Well, she called me her fighter pilot. And she was always, are we going to make this corner? I'm like, of course we're going to make this corner. but the only time we ever fell is if we'd, you know, like if you'd clock out and one hand clicks left and one hand clicks right. I mean, those are only really the times. But I mean, if I think about it, we just got on that thing almost from day one, and we rode well together because there were no problems with that.
And by the looks of it, you had a good laugh while doing it. It just looked like it was a ton of fun. And you mentioned rewarding. I mean, you've been able to race in Kona. You've had some great performances. How high would you rank your 70.3 and Ironman finish this year in helping Lucy get her medals?
It's Helen, by the way.
Oh, Helen. Yeah. Sorry, my bad.
No, sure. It's an interesting question because – so what was great about it was the red carpet. But in terms of the whole race, so the tough parts for me was to go off at the back, to come out of the swim almost last, to, you know, when we were running out of – to go onto our run, I could hear Paul K talk, congratulating people on their Kona slots. And – yeah, so I think it was tough on that aspect. And then what I think people don't realize, it wasn't that easy for me. I mean, in the run, I had to ask Helen if we could walk because I was so sore. My knees were hurting, my ankles. It's very, when you're used to running, and I say this humbly, I mean, I'm not saying I'm a fantastic runner, but when you run slowly, it's a lot harder on the body. So when I talk about the whole experience, it was physically quite tough for me. And my partner, Kim, actually said to me after the race, she's never seen me that – I'm never that broken after an Ironman as I was this year.
Yeah, it's incredible that – I mean, my Ironman experience in South Africa in 2016, I experienced the same sort of thing where I went in with an injury and I walked the entire run, and I knew I was going to. And I thought, how hard can it be to walk a marathon?
Yes.
I never, ever want to do that again. Like that, I would rather gargle with razor blades than have to walk a marathon again. It's hard, and people don't realize how tough that is. But yeah, kudos to you. I think a wonderful, wonderful gesture. And I mean, I followed that journey and I thought it was amazing. But let's get on to Kona now. And the racing on the Big Island and what makes that sort of special. Tell me a little bit about your experience in Hawaii.
So, you know, and the other day I was sitting at home and I long for that island. It's the funniest thing. It has such an incredible energy and it's hard to put into words, but I actually long to go back there. I think which is probably why we'll try to go back. But Kona, when you arrive, so it is this incredibly long plane trip. You're halfway around the world, but when you arrive, you immediately know you're somewhere special. And I think it's even just from the airport itself. The airport is like this open air thatch vibe. and so there's two things. It's the race on the island and then the island itself. And I had I don't know if it's mystical or magical experiences. It's like swimming when suddenly you're in a school of dolphins. The turtles that are just swimming anywhere where you go swimming. I can't explain the energy of that place. It's incredible. And then the Kona vibe added to that. Now, Kona, let me tell you, you can feel very small on a big island when you get there because, I mean, and I'm sure this people know this, it is the best of the best. It's everyone there for the same reason. And when we talk about those personalities and how we are, you know, driven and focused, and that's the kind of person that's on this island in that time. And people would have told you at any given time leading up to the race, there's just people running, swimming and cycling all day long. But people with the most fantastic bodies, with the most amazing kits, with the latest bikes and technology. Or with that focused look. I mean, you see people running with that look when they look at their watches, you know. I even had that look. You're looking at your splits. So it's quite an intense vibe leading up to the race. But it's incredibly special.
And from a race perspective itself, you had a pretty decent day out. I'm sure you were pretty chuffed with the way things panned out on the day.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first time I went, with an entourage of friends and family. There were 14 of us. We had an absolute ball. I was there only 5 days before the race, and suddenly the race was there, and suddenly it was over. And but the second time I went with a specific goal in mind, and that was really to have my very best race possible on the day. So I trained for that, and I wanted to get a top five finish, and I finished seventh. But I know, I mean, I had the best race that I could put together on that day. But it is incredibly tough. The course, not so much, but the conditions are incredibly tough. Incredibly tough. But I had my fastest swim ever. My bike was slightly disappointing. And I had a great run. So I don't have anything to complain about, to be honest.
But there is unfinished business. Amazing. You want to go back and get a podium in Kona, don't you?
I do. I want that bowl. I never cook, but I want that salad bowl.
Lizzie, talk to me the difference in approaches to the first and second one. You mentioned that first one, the experience and having that entourage, and then going back and with a one-eyed focus of that's what you're going for. Do you sort of advise people first time out to have that approach, or is it a case of, you know what, you're getting this opportunity, you might never get here again, give it your all? Yeah. What do you – do you sort of look back and think maybe you should have given that first one a proper tonk as well?
Yeah. No, listen, Brad, having said that, I went there, you know, I will always race at my best, and I trained my best up to this. So I wouldn't say that I didn't give them both equally my best effort, but I would say that I enjoyed the spirit around the race a little bit more in the first one. So, you know, in the second one, I was very conscious. I got there to train, eat, and sleep, which is what I did. You know, I got there 10 days before. I rested a lot indoors, you know. So, but maybe I should have been out more and enjoying that more. That's I think that's the difference between the two. Mm. You know, and I'm quite a strange one in the fact that I do a lot of what I do is by feel. So you won't find a power meter on my bike. I can go and run and I'll know exactly what pace I'm running at without looking at my watch. So I'm very much about feel and emotion and headspace. So just the difference between the two experiences is purely one of enjoying it more, I think. I don't know. And, you know, I saw people also who went and were so focused on this race, but got so stressed out by it that they blew in the race. So it's such a fine balance between going there prepared and mentally focused, but appreciating the moment. And a lot of people talk about that. It's about being in that moment, enjoying each moment, whether it's in the race or out of the race. Because I think there's so much that can slip by without us even realizing it. And for me, I don't want to look back at anything and say, sure, that was great. I want to know it in the moment. Do you know what I'm saying? Not in retrospect.
Yeah. I love
so
that.
That's my advice. If you do go to Kona, it's just appreciate that, but appreciate everything, you know, within the context of having a great race. I mean, we can't be stupid, but yeah, within the context of going there to race, it's just to lap up every moment and lap up every moment in the race, because I promise you that day goes so quickly. Yeah,
absolutely. Dizzy, as far as people getting into the sport of triathlon, I mean, we've got quite a range of people who listen to this podcast. There's obviously age groupers who have qualified and who are sort of pushing to it. But we've also got a lot of novices and newbies just getting into the sport and contemplating doing their first Ironman. If you could go back and talk to yourself and give yourself advice when you were starting out in the sport of triathlon again, what would you tell yourself? Is there anything you would do differently? What have you learnt over your triathlon career to this point?
Sure, that's an interesting question. I think, I think I did this well, but to probably have gotten help sooner, but I don't know that I would have done that differently. I mean, that was a pivotal moment. So I would say to somebody, you have to get help and train with like-minded people. I think if you want to get better. And the second thing, and probably if I had to think about it now in the moment, this is the thing to tell myself, is to be kinder to my body. I will train through an injury, which is what I always do. But to give myself more rest, I think, because the key, and I'd say this to anyone, is consistency of training. You know, it's pointless doing all the sessions but then having to be out for 2 weeks. Rather do, you know what I mean, 3/4 of the sessions, but be able to string that together over a 3-week period, if you know what I'm saying. So I don't know. I think it's. I don't know if I have any regrets, Brad. That's why I think I'm stuck with this question.
No. I love that you said be kinder to your body, because I think that's something a lot of triathletes do, especially when they first come into this world, because the vibe is amazing and it's easy to get sucked into that vibe of racing all the time. And we see it so often. I'm sure you see it too, that somebody comes into the sport all gung-ho and they put in a couple of great performances and a year or two later they're gone. You never see them again and they've burnt themselves out. And that's a real danger within the sport as an athlete. You've got to guard against.
Yeah. And one of the things that's a new thing, it wasn't sort of around when I started, is this thing about numbers and measuring. And while I do agree with it, I always tell people, you know, what's the point of measuring these things to death if you can't put together 3 weeks of solid training? It's like getting the basics right. It's always, that's what I think it is back to basics. And, you know, I heard someone say recently that it's all a numbers game, but you know, if you can't listen to your body and you can't say, you know, and it's like driving somewhere with a tom-tom and never concentrating on where you're going. You know, if you aren't able to go somewhere without that tom-tom, and I think that's with all these measurements and power and all of that, if you don't know your body exceptionally well, and you don't know how to listen to your body in a race and when to go hard and when not to go hard without looking at numbers, I don't know. I think that's a weakness. So, I always tell my guys, get the basics right, and then we can look at all those fancy things. And I know, I mean, I say this knowing that I do train by heart rate and I do look at power, but I think I have, if you can't add in a huge dose of guts and a huge dose of being able to push through pain, you know what I mean? The numbers mean nothing.
Agreed. No, I agree 100%. And it's so funny. Last week, I chatted to someone here on the podcast, Megan Phil. Now, if people haven't heard that episode yet, go back and listen to it. And we delved really deep into the mental strength. And you talk about guts. And in South Africa, we've got a wonderful Afrikaans word called fussbait. And that, I mean, if it's translated directly, it's called to bite hard, basically, just to hang on. And you talk about the guts. And in order to perform and race and win races and podium and get to Kona, you've got to have a huge measure of that in you. Do you think that's one of your strengths, is that you are able to just hang in there when times are tough?
Yeah, I do have an ability to push through the pain. And I think there's a fourth discipline to triathlon, and I think it's the ability to race. Because, you know, not anyone, but a lot of people can win a training session. You can win the track session, or you can win the long ride or whatever, but can you put it all together on race day? And I don't know, after a race, you'll hear so many people say, I blew on the run, or I went too hard on the bike, or, you know, it's the ability to put a great race together is, for me, the fourth discipline. And I feel that I'm quite disciplined in that, but I think I'm quite fortunate in that I know how to put a great race together, from swim to a good bike to a great run. That's how I like to see it. Well, I like to finish off with a great run.
Well, let the cat out the bag. How do you do that?
Look, it's so weird because I never thought of myself as a good runner, but it's you know, for me at Kona, I came out of the water, I think 39th in my age group, and then I was 18th off the bike and then 7th off the run. So I feel good when I run off the bike. I can't explain it. I think it must be something genetically, but I do really enjoy running off the bike. And I think I have an ability to know how hard to push on the bike. And that, as I say, without having a power meter, I know how hard to go where I'm having a good bike, but I know how to put a great run together.
It comes with experience. I get the sort of feeling that you battle to put it into words, but for me it's experience, and not like that I'm a great racer, but I think a good example, and I don't think I've ever spoken about it on the podcast here, in 2012 at Ironman South Africa, you're probably aware of it, but the weather was absolutely horrific. We had scale force winds, it rained, it was terrible, and I was in pretty good nick, and I was going for a PB and got on the bike, and we were literally, there's YouTube videos, I'll try and find a clip and put it in the show notes, where guys were sitting on their bikes into the headwind, and they were grinding like they were climbing mountains, and it was a dead flat piece of road. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. And I just got on the bike and I realized all bets were off. Today was not going to be a PR day. And just really backed off on the bike. And I was like, you know what? I'm here to enjoy it. Let's just have fun. And I got off the bike and I had a couple of different emotions going through my mind. One was like I was angry because I'd put in all this work and now all of a sudden the elements haven't played ball. But from a physical perspective, I wasn't tired because I didn't push on the bike. And I got off that bike and absolutely smoked the run. That I ran a marathon PB that day. Like, and it's not just an Ironman marathon PB. It's a marathon PB. And I learned the lesson that day is that if you back off on the bike, you've got a much better chance of running well as opposed to being on the limit the whole time on the bike. And that, for me, that was a massive lesson. In tough conditions, I could still run like that. And that, I think, is you only learn that when you learn it.
Well, that's exactly it, hey. I mean, you won't know till you're in the race conditions and faced with those challenges. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Desi, it's been great sharing your journey. What's next? When are we going back to Kona? Are we waiting till we turn 50 and age grouping up, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, at the after party at Ironman, some guy was introducing me to his fiance, and he said, you know, this lady in her heyday, she was quite good. And I said, you know, I was like, my heyday was October. So I do feel that it's time for a comeback. So, I'm training for 70.3 in Durban. I'd like to have a great race. Let's see how things pan out. And then we'll see, you know, a lot of it is also financial and, let's see what happens there. But I would like to go to Kona one more time. And I think when I'm 50 is ideal.
Well, Desi, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated. Look forward to chatting a little bit about your swim, your bike, your run, and nutrition. But we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time today.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks, Brad.
I loved that story. Fantastic. Desi, thank you for your time once again. Much appreciated. And thank you for listening to the Kona Edge. Your time is just as much appreciated. Been getting some great messages across the various social media platforms, just from people reaching out and telling me how much they are enjoying the podcast. And if you'd like to reach out, if you've got any questions or comments, suggestions, you can pop me an email. It comes straight to my inbox. The email is brad@thekonaedge.com. And I look forward to hearing from you. I love hearing from triathletes from around the planet. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. We're back again tomorrow. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.